Welcome to Brave Together podcast here on UK Health Radio, an empowering resource for the parents of children with disabilities, neurodivergence, and all unique needs.
I had convinced myself that once my son is okay, then I'm allowed to be okay. Once my son is enjoying his life, then I'm allowed to enjoy my life. You talk about laughter. Once my son is laughing again, then I can find the funny and laugh again, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what Zach showed me that day is that is a hell of a lot of pressure to put on someone.
Hello, dearest Bravies. It's me, Jessica Pate, one of the co-hosts for Brave Together podcast, the brave mom to a 22-year-old son with Prader-Willi syndrome. And I'm the founder of the nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together. I created We Are Brave Together so that all of us caregivers would not feel so alone. This is our place, our community, where we all belong. And this podcast is just one of our many offerings to you. For this story episode number 229, I am overjoyed to be chatting with speaker, author, and comedian Christina Kuzmic, who shares her journey from childhood in Croatia to becoming a voice of hope and humor for parents navigating the challenges of altered motherhood. In this episode, Christina shares her personal journey of navigating guilt as a parent while dealing with her son's mental health struggles and emphasizes the importance of self-care and how it can positively impact both parents and children. Why Christina's work means so much to me is that I too have had children who have battled depression and anxiety and have been diagnosed with ADHD. And it's a very different journey than my journey with my son, Ryan, who has a disability called Prader-Willi syndrome. I feel like when you're a parent to a child or teen or adult who battles mental health struggles, it is its own version of heartbreak. It's a different, hard journey than when you have a child with a rare disease or medical issues. And not to compare, because every story counts, every diagnosis counts, it's just different. Christina has been so open, so honest, so vulnerable with her story and her son's story, of course, with her son's permission. Christina has completed two comedy tours, performing in over 60 cities across the US and Canada. Her first book, Hold On, But Don't Hold Still, was released through Penguin Random House in 2020 and has since been translated to 8 languages. Christina's second book, I Can Fix This and Other Lies I Told Myself While Parenting My Struggling Child, was released in 2024. And we will be hearing an excerpt from that today. Christina also has a new app, Hope and Humor Daily, designed to provide support and encouragement for parents. Here is just a quick reminder to join our free community at wearebravetogether.org. Please support our growth by rating and reviewing this podcast and sharing episodes that inspire you. And of course, check out our full episodes weekly on the We Are Brave Together YouTube channel. Christina has such an amazing heart and is truly making the world a better place with her books and comedy. Now please enjoy this excerpt from her most recent book, followed by my conversation with the deeply delightful Christina Kuzmic.
From the book, I Can Fix This and Other Lies I Told Myself While Parenting My Struggling Child. I am told over and over again that setbacks are a normal part of healing. Sure, I get it. But when I think of a setback, I think 2 steps forward, 1 step back. That's a setback. This feels like 2 steps forward, 90 steps back. These are not setbacks. This is speeding in reverse with failed brakes. I can't do this. I'm completely out of ideas. Luca has been hospitalized. He's had 3 different psychiatrists trying to adjust and supervise his medication. He's been in individual therapy. and group therapy and family therapy. He's had full-time support at a residential center, talking through all his emotions, learning coping skills and breath work and meditation, working on anger management and expressing his needs in a healthy way, being encouraged in his strengths and talents. He's participated in support groups with his peers. He has been loved and encouraged and cared for and prayed for. How is he not in a better place? If all these professionals haven't had the power to help him heal, what power do I alone have? And have I done enough? And how much is enough? What I desperately need right now is a story with a beginning, a middle, and a happy ending. I want the movie version of this ordeal. Luca deserves to get better because that's what's supposed to happen. I want the version where he went through a really hard time, he struggled, we hit some terrifying moments, but then things started to fall into place. And now we get to experience a resolution. Healing wins, credits roll. Every good moment is shadowed by a dark cloud waiting to dump its contents on us. There doesn't seem to be a beginning, middle, and end. There seems to be only grappling for a foothold and then waiting for that foothold to crumble. I swing between my determination to fix and my fear as each new plan collapses. I want my hope back and I want my son back. I'm angry. I'm not angry at Luca or the doctors or the therapists. Maybe I'm angry at depression. Maybe I'm angry at myself for not knowing all the things I don't know. Maybe I'm angry that every time my phone rings with an unknown number, I panic that something has happened to my son. Maybe I'm angry that I don't know how to live a life in which I constantly worry about my child killing himself. Maybe I'm angry at uncertainty. When does it get easier? When does it start to make sense? And then out of the blue, Luca has a good day. Nothing remarkable, just a good day. He gets out of bed in the morning. He brushes his teeth. He doesn't get harassed at school. He turns in his homework. I get a message from a Spanish teacher telling me that Luca was really helpful to another student during class. A good day. Maybe we're supposed to go through hell days to appreciate that average days are actually amazing days. I have to believe that all the effort put into Luca's health so far has not been in vain. But I also can't live solely for the resolution. My sanity cannot be tied to the progress he is or isn't making. My value can't be attached to any specific results because the outcome is beyond my control. And as terrifying as that is, there's a level of acceptance that has to take place in order for me to avoid more tension in an already stressful situation. I struggle to sit with uncertainty. I remember the hot August day I was in labor with Luca. After hours and hours of contractions, it was time to push, but my body felt so drained and weak, and I was scared. I can't do this, I whispered through tears. I really don't think I can. I can't do this. My midwife looked me in the eyes and said, "But you're already doing it. You are already doing it." 10 minutes later, I got to meet Luca. I know there will be many more days of feeling like I can't. I can't handle any more bad news. I can't watch my son suffer. I can't deal with the fact that I don't know how to help him. I can't carry yet another load of fresh, new stress. I can't manage more sleepless, fear-filled nights. I can't do this. But I'm already doing it. I'm already doing it.
Hi, Christina. Welcome to Brave Together podcast. Suzanne and I are thrilled, overjoyed, grateful. We're so excited about our conversation.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Especially after having you at the Leaders Retreat, we're just so excited to share some of your stories with our audience and share you with our audience. And Susanna, do you want to go first?
Yeah, well, I'm just curious and wondering, Christina, you talk a lot about, you know, motherhood and parenting, which, you know, we can gobble up every day, all day, because we need so many reminders that we don't suck as mothers. But what about little Christina? Like, what was your childhood like? We know you were born in Croatia, and we just were curious about, like, your upbringing, how you were raised, what values were instilled in you as a young girl, and how that sort of shaped your life as a mother as well.
That's a great question. So yeah, I was born and raised in Croatia, and we didn't have a lot of money when I was real young. And there are certain memories I have from my childhood that I definitely think really shaped not just who I am, but what I'm passionate about. One of the things I always think of is, so we didn't have a lot of money, and in Croatia at the time, there would be people that would come knocking on your door asking for money or food instead of, you know, in America, you usually see that when you walk by a unhoused person or something. And I just have such clear memories of my mom, you know, somebody would knock, she'd open the door and she would say, I can't give you money, but I'll give you our bread. Or, and this was like the time Croatia was still part of Yugoslavia. It was communism, like, you know, long lines every morning to get bread in the bakery. I just remember my mom always like giving what she could. And that really left an impact on me. And, you know, one of the stories I shared in my first book is how when I had nothing, I started thinking about like, what's the, is there one little thing I can still offer when I have nothing? And I focused on that. And that sort of led me through everything. Like even, you know, I know at the event we were just all at together for your leaders, you know, I talked about my son and his mental health struggles, even through stuff like that. When I don't feel like I have a lot, is there one little thing I can give? So it's sort of become this way of getting through anything. And I don't think, you know, I'm sure my mom didn't even realize at the time what an impact that would leave on me. So it's not just about physically giving, right? Whatever you can, but also what do you have emotionally to give? What do you have mentally to give? Whether it's for your children, your marriage or whatever, when you feel like you have nothing, you always have something little. And then another part of my childhood I would touch on is that I was crazy and wild and, you know, I was raised in a pretty strict family, but I didn't like that. And I was a little rebellious kid. And I think where that's impacted my work now is I really, really try to focus or try to encourage people to focus on their authenticity and realize that all those labels that society or teachers or whoever may have put on us as our flaws or weaknesses are actually our greatest strengths if we learn to direct them and focus them in a smart way. Because now everything I got in trouble for as a kid, I get paid to do, right? I get paid to be goofy and funny and over the top and silly, you know, when I tour with my comedy or, you know, I was too honest and I was too vulnerable and I felt too much. And now I literally created a career of being completely vulnerable. So I would say those are two things that sort of come to mind first when I think of my childhood and how it affected who I am today.
And what was your mom like?
My mom is my complete opposite as far as personality. Like she, to this day, if people come over, she will go hide in her bedroom. Like she's like, I want to be alone. I do not want to be around humans. The only humans I want to be around are my kids, my grandkids. Otherwise, leave me alone. And so she is like stunned at the idea of me going on stage in front of hundreds of people and speaking and then hanging out with them afterwards and a meet and greet and hugging them all. And she's like, this is my worst nightmare.
Oh, so my God.
Very different in that way. But she has a huge, huge, huge heart. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I got some of that from her.
Yes. I want to say that very much trickled down. Very much, obviously trickled down. Yes, for sure. So I guess your sort of your traits, your personality attributes, like that led you to your current career, which you've already referenced. Like you get to be goofy, you get to be, you know, over the top. What gives you inspiration or what has helped you sort of hone in your like mind's eye observing day-to-day life in motherhood to make those funny videos to just like bring it to the surface and make us laugh and appreciate all these different aspects?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this career was never something that was like a dream when I was a kid. First of all, again, I grew up in Croatia. So even the idea of, I don't know, any sort of performing, it was limited to like a small theater there or something. And then also until I was, I don't know, was I in college when YouTube came along, social media didn't exist when I was in college, like all this stuff, my career really started by me making videos and posting them online. None of that even existed. So it was never like, this is my goal in life. It just sort of, and even when I started, it was never, this is going to be my career. Mm-hmm. It always was just meant to be a fun little hobby, a creative outlet for me. Mm-hmm. But I remember being in a meeting once, this was just a few years into my career. I hadn't even, you know, had a book deal yet, nothing. And I don't think I'd toured yet. And somebody asked me, so what do you want? Like your videos are going viral. What do you want next? Do you want a book deal? Do you want a TV show? Do you want, what do you like, what do you want? And what came out of my mouth, like it was one of those things where like, I didn't even have the thought. It just spilled out of me was I want to be for others what I needed when I was at my lowest. And the minute I said it, I started crying, like in this very fancy, I'm not going to say with who, but it was like this fancy people powerful people meeting. I just started crying and I just sat there and I don't even know what they were saying after that, because it was just this like epiphany of this is why I've been making these videos. This is why, because from the very first video I made, subconsciously, I realize now, I was like, I want to be for others what I needed when I was that single mom who was sharing a small room with my two little kids and couldn't afford anything. And, you know, cried every time my daughter had holes in her socks, because guess what? Thrift stores don't sell socks. And I was like, how am I going to afford brand new socks? Like just stuff like that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So that's where all of my inspiration comes. It comes from my hardest moments, like even again, more recently, supporting my son through his mental health struggles. Right. And so many people around me just didn't know what to say and they didn't want to talk about it, or they judged me, or, and what did I need at the time? I just needed people to be vulnerable and open and honest about it. And, you know, A, not sugarcoat it, but B, not judge it like there's something wrong with my kid. My kid has an illness like any other illness, like, you know. And so my inspiration comes from that. And then as my following has grown and I've heard more and more from, you know, people who follow my page, I've read my books, they're so inspiring to me because I hear their stories. And somebody once referred to me, I don't even remember who, as like a cheerleader for humans. And I was like, okay, that's me. I don't have the pom-poms. I have, you know, ice cream and cake instead. But like, that's, if I could encourage, if that could be my legacy, is to somehow just encourage people, then I'm very happy and fulfilled.
And you are that for all of us. Very encouraging and very, you do bring, like you say, hope and humor to us who have been following you and listening to you and reading your books.
No, thank you. And that actually, even that idea of hope and humor, we sort of started branding all my stuff as hope and humor. And then when I went on my first tour, it was called the Hope and Humor Tour. Even that came from just trying to like narrow down basically what did I need the most at my toughest moments in life, whatever they may be, whether they were as a teenager or whether they were in my 40s, whatever life threw my way, divorce, you know, motherhood stuff, stress stuff, financial stuff. What did I need? I needed hope and humor. I needed hope, right? I needed to know that someone else has lived it, cried it, felt it, screamed it, and they made it through. And so will I. And then I needed to laugh because for me, laughter is like medicine. I wrote in my first book how for me, going through life without humor is like eating soup with a fork. Like you'll get a little bit, but you're going to miss out on so much goodness if you don't find the funny in all the crazy.
Christina, what would you advise our audience of, you know, parent caregivers who live a very, very serious, you know, live very serious lives, right? Caretaking amidst motherhood or fatherhood. And, you know, some of our moms have kids who are very fragile and their lives are very fragile. And I mean, even when you have a child, as you know, struggling with mental health stuff, they're also fragile, you know? So life gets so lifey and serious. What would your advice be to our audience to like just still try to find the humor in the daily living?
I mean, two things come to mind. One is I think a lot of times we think of humor as some sort of like, I don't know, almost like it's disrespectful to laugh during serious situations, right? It's disrespectful to find humor when your child is struggling or, you know, whatever hardship, you're grieving something. And I think we need to change that mindset, right?
Yeah.
Our body needs to release. Our body can release through tears. And I know that all of your audience and all of your people have done that a lot. But our body can also release through laughter. And there's nothing disrespectful about it. It's almost like letting ourselves take a breath.
Yeah.
It's letting ourselves just take a breath and just laugh. If you look up the research, it's actually so healthy for us physically to laugh. So I think we need to change that mindset of like, this is medicine. Like I'm doing something good for myself. I'm not making fun of my situation. I'm not making fun of my kid. I'm not, you know, making something huge into something little and insignificant and trivial. No, I understand the bigness of the situation I'm going through, but I can still find it funny and see it as therapeutic. And then the other thing I want to say is when we're in that mindset of constant fear, I'm going to lose my child, to help my child, that becomes so consuming. And the one thing I had to learn when I was, you know, worried about my child taking his life, I had to learn to not allow the few things that were completely out of my control to control me completely. Mm-hmm. Because that's going to destroy our joy, our ability to find humor, our ability to actually take good care of ourselves, is that we allow the few things that are out of our control. And unfortunately, there's a lot, right, that's actually out of our control, especially when our kid is struggling. We allow it to control every part of our life. Just realizing that, you know, I'm allowed to prioritize myself and I have to make sure that I'm not attaching my value to whatever is happening with my loved one. That was a big one for me, is I was attaching my value to every struggle, every setback, everything going on was like, even sometimes it was subconscious, but it was like, what does this say about me as a mother?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not good enough? What mistakes did I make when I was raising my kid that my kid ended up with depression and, you know, these other struggles? So just learning to detach my value has also made me feel like, whoo, I can breathe. Because we attach our value to everything going on with our kids.
We do.
Feel like we're drowning. It's going to always feel heavy and impossible. And I also, one thing that always inspires me when I'm like, when I feel like I don't even know how to do that, I'm overwhelmed. It's like, if I in the moment can't love myself enough to do that for myself, to detach the value, to be selfless and take good care of myself, if I can't do it for me, then I need to do it remembering that I'm an example to my child.
Yep.
Children will learn more from watching how I live than anything I preach at them, right? And
right.
So I want my children to see a mother who is not putting herself down and beating herself up and, you know, feeling awful about herself every time the child is struggling. And I want my children to see a mother who takes really good care of herself and makes sure she finds those moments of joy and laughter and levity, because they will learn from watching how I live. I am their model.
You said so much there. There's so many things to comment on. And you know, on that last part, I absolutely love that, because I feel like me and my team, you know, we're always trying to give permission to our moms to take care of themselves, that it is not selfish, that it doesn't need to involve any sort of mom guilt just because you're taking time away to, you know, do things that light you up or bring you joy or help you feel grounded or physically strong or healthy or whatever. We're always, always giving permission, it seems like. So I love that you talk about that. And I love that you talked about that in the book, that that it was actually like a really critical message that you received and took to heart and put into action to take care of your own healing, to take care of yourself in the midst of it. It's not about just, you know, trying to control circumstances, which we can't. We can't control. We really can't control anything except for the words that we say.
Yeah.
And maybe the actions we take. That's about it, right?
Can I share? I know you know it because you heard it. Yeah. The 40th birthday story.
Yes, please. Yes.
It's, you know, along this theme. So I shared in the book how when my son was really struggling during that time, my 40th birthday was coming up and I had never had a birthday party for myself, but I always make a big deal for my kids and everybody else for birthday. So my husband was like, let's throw you an epic big 40th birthday party. And he reserved this beautiful restaurant in LA and he got a DJ, dance floor, caterers, ordered a cake. I mean, the whole deal. I had friends flying in from out of town. Like, this was going to be this amazing 40th birthday party. And my kids were involved in planning it. And it was set to be on Friday, which was my actual birthday day. And Tuesday before that Friday, I had to call the police on my 15-year-old who had a really huge, scary episode where I was 100% sure if I didn't call the police, he was going to hurt himself or hurt somebody else. And they came and they took him to the hospital. And then Wednesday before that Friday, when my birthday party was supposed to be, he was in the ER all day waiting for a bed to open up in a psychiatric hospital. And I kept visiting him and he kept kicking me out. And it was just this awful, tense day. And then Thursday, the day before my planned party, he was finally in a psychiatric hospital. And so, of course, I'm going to cancel the birthday party. And my husband said to me, you know, there are no visiting hours in the evening at the hospital. So you're not going to be able to see Luca, my son, anyway. Why don't we still have the party? And I was like, I'm not going to have a party for myself right now. This is silly. And it feels like wrong in every way, right? I think any mother would feel that way. I'm not having a party. My son is hospitalized. And we just had this awful, like one of the worst weeks, probably the worst week of my life. And then I called my mother-in-law and she said something to me that just really got me. She said, Christina, maybe this is the exact time you need to be surrounded by people who love you. Even now saying it, I get teary-eyed. Yeah. And I don't know, something about her saying that made me go, okay, fine. I'll have the party. And I think part of me also at the time was like, oh, there's people who flew in from out of town and I don't want to inconvenience. We do that a lot, right? I don't want to inconvenience anybody.
Right.
So I decided to go through with this party. And the whole time, I just feel so icky about it, right? And I show up to my party dressed up. I have a ton of makeup on because I have been crying so hard. My whole face was swollen. In fact, when I was making videos during that time online, the comments I got were like, what's wrong with her face? Did she have some kind of plastic surgery? Did she get a bunch of filler? Because I looked so swollen. Anybody who's cried for like...
Sorry.
And so I just looked awful and I show up to this party and I'm doing that thing where I'm like faking the smile and just trying to make sure everybody else is comfortable because I don't want anybody to be uncomfortable, even though most of them knew what was happening in our home. And halfway through the dance party, a friend pulls me over to the dance floor. And by the way, the whole time, all I kept thinking was Luca was supposed to be here. He knew how excited I was about this party. Like he even helped me come up with the song list for the, you know, DJ and he's not here. And it was just so devastated. Anyway, my friend pulls me onto the dance floor and I let loose and I dance and I dance and I dance and I dance. And I wrote in the book how it felt so good to just dance all. It was almost like my body was releasing all that stress.
Yes.
And right after it felt really, really good. It felt really, really bad. And the thought so crystal clear in my mind was, what kind of a mother has a party for herself to celebrate her life and dances while her son is in a psychiatric hospital against his will, wanting to kill himself? What kind of a mother does that? Mm-hmm. And I carried that guilt with me for months. And then at one point I had a conversation with one of my best friends, Zach, and I told him, I said, I cannot shake this guilt. I feel like the biggest piece of crap. Like, I cannot believe I went through with that party and all that. And he listened. And then when I was done, he said, Christina, you did your son a favor. And I was like, I don't understand what you're talking about. And he said, he proceeded to tell me how when he was in high school, he went through a really deep depression. He said, and during that time, I put my mom through a lot. I know she wasn't sleeping well. She was constantly worried. I was awful to her at times, so awful to her. Mm-hmm. And if I knew that on top of all of that, she canceled something she was really excited about and looking forward to because of me, like I was the reason she canceled, I would still feel guilty about that 30 some years later. I would carry that guilt deathbed. By going through with that party, you gave Luca one less thing to feel that he destroyed. Hmm. And I just remember like chills. Wow. And I felt like I could feel the guilt just like melting off me, because I realized that I think every parent can relate to this. I had convinced myself that once my son is okay, then I'm allowed to be okay. Once my son is enjoying his life, then I'm allowed to enjoy my life. Mm-hmm. You talk about laughter. Once my son is laughing again, then I can find the funny and laugh again, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what Zach showed me that day is that is a hell of a lot of pressure to put on someone. And when I was writing that, because my son helped me through every chapter of the book, and he wrote the last chapter so parents could hear directly from the kid. When I was writing that chapter, I called him into my office and I was like, wait, I don't know if we ever talked about this. Like, do you know I had that party? And he said, oh yeah, I saw videos of you dancing. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I kind of got teary eyed and I said, you got to be honest with me. Like when you first found out I went through at that party, what did you think? Because when he found out, he was still in a bad spot. By the time we were writing a book, he was better, but he was still in a bad spot. And then he got teary eyed and he said, Mom, thank you. Thank you. And then we had this beautiful conversation where he said to me, you know, when you're struggling, when you're the one who's depressed and suicidal or whatever your struggles are, right? When you're struggling and you're watching how it affects your family, you're seeing your mom, you know, falling apart, and you're seeing, you know, now maybe the parents are arguing more because it affects the marriage. Now you're seeing the other sibling. When you're seeing how your struggles affect everybody else, you feel awful. You are carrying that. You're carrying that guilt and that shame. And, you know, think about what we do to our kids unintentionally, because we're all coming from a place of love, but we're basically sending them the message that I can't be okay until you're okay. And our kids thinking, Mom, I don't know how to be okay. I don't know how to be okay. I want to be okay. I want everybody else to be okay. I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. We're putting this pressure unintentionally. Again, I don't want anybody listening to this feel guilty.
Yeah.
And our kids now are not only dealing with their struggles, but now on top of that, they're feeling guilt. My son is now 22. He still will bring up, oh, I still feel guilty about that thing, Mom. Or I still feel guilty. Mm-hmm. And it kills me that he carries this guilt, right?
Yeah.
So my friend Zach was right. We are doing our children a huge favor mm-hmm. every time we take the best care of ourselves, because it removes that pressure from them to have to, quote unquote, fix us, from them to have to fix themselves in order to fix us. Yeah. That's not fair. That's not fair to a full grown, mature adult, much less a child.
Right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
There's another story that you talk about, the no thank you story. And I think that that would be so beneficial for our listeners because, you know, our moms and dads, you know, go out in public with their, you know, disabled children, teenagers or adults, and they get looks and they get comments and they get stares and they get judgment, especially with, you know, big behaviors or simming or meltdowns or outbursts or you name it, right? So could you tell that story about the, you know, how you have adopted no thank you and how we can all adopt that no thank you?
Yeah. So that night I mentioned a little bit ago where I had to call the police on my son. So we had just recently moved into the neighborhood. I didn't know any of my neighbors and it was a very quiet neighborhood. The type of neighborhood you never see a cop car at, like there's never any issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm calling the cops on my kid. And two police cars pull up in front of my house, lights on, you know, the whole thing. And my kid is, even though they were taken on psychiatric hold, they put him in handcuffs so that he wouldn't try to hurt himself. And so he's in handcuffs, he's barefoot, they're dragging him out of the house. These police officers did not have a lot of experience with mental health struggles. And so they're just like, you know, dragging him out, put him in the back of the cop car. And I notice across the street, these two women that I don't know, mm-hmm. they're my neighbors, but I've met them. And they're just staring at this whole scene, right? Mm-hmm. And my mind immediately does what everybody else's mind would do. Oh my gosh, they don't know my family. We just moved here. What are they going to think of us? What do they think of my kid? What rumors are they going to spread about my family or my child? Or, you know, like the whole thing just floods my mind. And I just remember three words that came to me so clearly in that moment. No, thank you. And basically it was like this visual of them handing me this potential judgment or whatever, or even stress, all the stuff that now I'm going to have to worry about what people are going to think of all, right? And me saying, no, thank you. You can keep that. I'm not picking that up.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I realized in that moment, thankfully, is if I pick that up, what they're handing me or what I think they're handing me, right? If I pick that up, then that's going to distract me from what I actually need to focus on, which is figuring out how to best support my son.
Right.
And this is too delicate of a situation for anything to distract me, especially nonsense like that, right? Mm-hmm. This is my entire attention energy. So I cannot just willingly give my attention and energy to that. That would not be wise or healthy, right?
Right.
And I just kept repeating, no, thank you. And then actually the police officers wouldn't let me follow them. I had to wait till next morning to see my son. And so I went back to my bedroom and I laid in my bed and guess what? My own inner bully started. Oh, Christina, this is your fault. Can't believe you had to call the police. What kind of mother has to call the police? You're totally lost control of the situation. What did you do wrong? Blah, 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 blah. All that stuff. And again, no, thank you. See, this is the thing. We allow either our own insecurities, our own inner bully, or/and other people's judgments,
right,
literally eat up our precious energy. I mean, when you're going through something like this, you are already overwhelmed. Any parent trying to support a kid through anything is already overwhelmed. It is so hard. It is so stressful. It is so exhausting. Why are we willingly choosing to now take some of that energy that's so precious and just give it away? And so the no thank you just became something I still to this day use, you know, when maybe it's some stupid comment I get online or it's a look I get in public or whatever the situation is. I just think, no, thank you. Like this is a choice I can make. I can choose to pick whatever up they're handing me. I can choose to pick it up, but it's a choice I have to make. Why would I willingly make that choice? So those three words, they sound so simple, but man, I even have it on a t-shirt now for myself. Like it's so simply, it's so powerful.
So I just want to show everybody the cover. I can fix this. There are so many stories from this book that we could ask you to tell. We could be here all day, but we can't. We can't be here all day. We want to honor your time. So everyone who's listening, please go get the book. We'll link everything, of course. but please go get the book because it's so, so good. And there's so many great stories that will really hit home. I do want to ask you something else. And I know, I think we talked about it at our leaders retreat too, but what do you think it's going to take to really eradicate the stigma around mental health?
I mean, if I knew exactly what it was, I would be, you know, already making sure it's done. I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a very slow process. Unfortunately, I'm even more in a way, I'm encouraged and discouraged through this last year since my book came out. Mm-hmm. And not just in America, but, you know, I did a European book tour and just hearing stories, it's unbelievable to me how much stigma and shame there still is. It's unbelievable to me how many families would come to me after an event and they would whisper and some people would say, my mom doesn't even know that my child is struggling because I can't, my mom is going to blame me or my mom is going to, you know, think mm-hmm. whatever, help mm-hmm. you. That's all made up. That's all in his head. He just needs to be grateful, you know?
Right.
But so that's the discouraging part is that I see mm-hmm. that the stigma is still very much there. The encouraging part, I guess, is that I do think more people are talking about it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be a slow process, but I'm hoping that, and I don't want to give myself credit because this book wouldn't exist without my son. So I'm going to give my son all the credit. The fact that he was like, yes, let's write this book. And then he wrote the last chapter mm-hmm. and he's a young man, because unfortunately there's still a lot of sexism. There's still a lot of boys need to be tough and not vulnerable and all that crap. So the fact that he, as a young man, wrote so honestly and vulnerably and actually wrote about shame specifically in his chapter, I think that the more we just are honest and raw, mm-hmm. I think that's what's going to start to change it. I will say this. Will you be judged if you talk about it openly? 100%. I can guarantee it. You will be judged. Will you receive a lot of negativity and all kinds of crap that is going to hurt and bother you? And you're going to have to keep repeating no, thank you over and over. 100%. I have received more judgment than ever in the last year. My son has. You're going to be judged. But here's the thing. We cannot let other people's ignorance and stupidity stop us from focusing on the big issue. And the big issue is shame is killing our children. Shame is killing our loved ones. Mm-hmm. I remember somebody telling me that their spouse died by suicide. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, it wasn't depression that killed them. It was shame. And it gave me chills. Mm-hmm. It's so, 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 so true. If there was no stigma and shame when it came to mental health struggles, I think we'd have a lot of people still here that we lost. I really believe that. And the only way to destroy shame is to talk about it, right? Because shame thrives in secrets and silence. It thrives. Yep. But once you bring it into the light and once you talk about all these topics, and not just talk about them, but talk about them confidently the way my son has. Like, yeah, I have mental illness. I'm going to struggle with this for the rest of my life. Do I feel shame about it? Why would I feel shame about it? I wouldn't feel shame if I had cancer. I didn't.
Exactly. This.
Yeah, I can feel shame for bad choices I make in life, for hurting people. This is not a choice. I'm not going to feel shame for something that's out of my control. I'm going to feel proud of myself for seeking help and getting the help I need and doing the things I know that I need to do in order to feel better. But I'm not going to feel shame about it. The more we confidently own it, I think that's what's going to ultimately make a difference. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've thought a lot since my book came out is, one of the things my son and I hear the most from people, and I, again, very well-intentioned, everybody will say, you're so brave, you're so brave, you're so brave. Oh my gosh, you're so brave. Talk about it so openly. And I so often think like, yes, thank you. We appreciate that. But also, God, my one wish, I hope I live to see the day when it's not considered brave to talk about mental health struggles openly.
Yes.
Because I think I mentioned this at the event, at your event, how my son was hospitalized for appendicitis. And when I shared a picture of him on social media in the hospital for his appendix, nobody called us brave. Nobody said, oh, you're so brave.
I know. I know. I know.
Right? We just have to normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's illness. Health is health. Period.
Yep. I agree 1,000%. Oh my gosh. Christina, I want to spend all day with you and share more stories. And everyone, please get her books. Before we go, I want you to tell everyone about your new app. Brand new.
Yes. Hope and Humor Daily. There's those words, hope and humor again. I basically wanted to create a place that, again, I needed and still need when I'm in my rough spot. So there's a lot of features that are meant to encourage you and give you hope. And there's a great place where you can, we trained a chatbot for over a year with all of my experiences and knowledge and books so that you can get a response in real time. If you're in a pickle, I just heard recently from a woman that was like, my kid is I messaged it and I said, my kid is isolated. I don't know what to do. And it gave me three very practical tips. And by the end of the day, I was talking to my kid. My kid was talking to me and opening up. And so it's nice to hear it's helping. And then we're actually also starting support groups on there. There'll be live support groups weekly. And what we're doing is we're going to make sure that every single question asked in the support group gets answered. And then wow. also in every group, one person will be chosen at random to get a one-on-one personal video call with me. And that's just free included in the app. But it's just my way to get to connect with that parent who is maybe going through something similar and needs either my perspective or just a virtual hug and pep talk. So I'm really, really excited about that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. It looks fantastic. It sounds fantastic. You're definitely meeting a need because there are people everywhere, all over the world who need the support and who need the love and the care. So thank you so much. And the humor and yes. the humor. It's chock full of so many videos, and there's lots of great options in there for what you need, what you're looking for. So I'm very excited about this, and we'll of course link that as well. Is there anything you haven't said, Christina, that you want to make sure that you tell our listeners today?
I mean, the main thing I just want to tell is, you know, never feel guilty taking care of the most important person in your child's life. And that's you. So never, ever, ever feel bad prioritizing yourself. You're doing your kid a favor.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. So good to see you and be with you. And I'll see you again.
Thanks so much for listening today on UK Health Radio. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization, We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms, offering support groups that are virtual and in-person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. And we have published our first anthology of caregiving stories entitled Becoming Brave Together, Heroic, Extraordinary Caregiving Stories from Mothers Hidden in Plain Sight. It will encourage and validate every parent caregiver. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood awaits you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only. It's not a substitute for professional care and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, links, show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.